Hi, this is Beth Murphy. I am a clinical psychologist and a retired firefighter. I am transitioning from a private practice in clinical psychology to being the, I'm not quite sure what my title is yet. We were still figuring that out, but mental health clinic director as part of the Seattle Fire Department Health and Wellness Clinic. So I work with the department's, the Seattle Firefighter Healthcare Trust. And I am helping to build a program that is looking to move from being reactive to being proactive, see if we can help make firefighters healthy and stay healthy. So, people come in healthy, and it is not unreasonable to expect that you go out healthy. And so that's part of what I'm doing at the clinic with their medical doc and a couple other medical providers. So I'm kind of in the transition of doing that. and I apologize for sniffing and coughing. I'm actually trying to recover from having COVID. And I got vaccinated and I got boosted and I still got COVID. So anyway, it's been a fun time. So if you've listened to my show before, there's probably a few things you might realize. One is I can be a bit rambly, and I'm going to try not to do that today. The other is that I will try and address topics that, like, my clients bring in, or if I've done any teaching, questions that maybe attendees had. And sometimes I draw from personal experience. And I will say, to be completely honest, is that everything that I talk about, there is, you know, some aspect of me in it. I think it's difficult to, I guess, have some aspect of yourself in it. So, you know, it's like I am the accumulation of all my experiences, and it influences how I see the world and how I interact with the world, and it informs how I understand everything. So I often will incorporate myself in my own experiences. So today actually is going to be probably more based in my experience, and I'm going to share some information that is private, that most or often, you know, a psychologist wouldn't share, but I think it's useful to share it and to actually show how to apply some of the tools that I talk about, because it's easy to tell people, oh, if you're having this problem, you should try this or that. We're all great at giving advice and directing people. You know, and as firefighters, it's like, that's what you do. It's a lot easier to help other people, and it's a lot harder to take care of yourself. And bottom line is that if you want to be healthy physically and mentally, then you need to take care of yourself. And it's sometimes difficult to put yourself first. So, I guess I'll just start with, so I said that I had COVID, and it really sucks. I hate being sick. I mean, I'm like everybody else. but I got COVID because I had to go to the hospital. and so I've not only been recovering from COVID, but I've had to, I guess, kind of like reboot my brain over the past 3 weeks or so. So I'll share briefly what happened. And this is what was told to me because I honestly don't remember it. So my husband relayed all this to me. So August 13th, in the morning, so a Saturday morning, apparently I had a seizure. And my husband, John, who you've all heard, either him managing my show or him doing his own legal show, he had to call 911. And I always joked about how I would never, ever ride in an aid car. Like, I would never call 911, and I always said I'd have to be unconscious. Well, that pretty much was the case. So, although I guess I had some level of consciousness, but I don't remember at all. So he called 911, and it was the first time I had ever had a seizure like that. And you know, full tonic clonic, and so he called, the EMTs came, and they're part of a fire department that is obviously local to us, and actually the fire department that my husband used to be the deputy fire chief for. He said he didn't recognize anybody. So anyway, they load me up, and en route to the hospital, I apparently had another seizure, and they requested the medics and met the medics on the freeway on the way to the hospital. And the medics are part of the Bellevue Fire Department, and Bellevue Fire is the department that I worked for. So I was told that one of the guys that had responded is someone that I knew, that I actually worked with. They told me John Baxter. So if you're listening, John, thank you. They did whatever they do, which I honestly don't know, because again, it's like I don't remember. And then they get me to the hospital, and I get into the emergency room, and then I have another seizure. And I was told that John Baxter came running in with a syringe of something to help. But the docs and the nurses, okay, we got it. And so they ran some tests, you know, so did a blood workup, did a CT scan, and then took me up for an MRI. None of which I remember. And I find it interesting because I noticed in the notes that they said that I was alert and oriented and responding. And my husband said that it did appear at times that I was responding clearly, but he said that they asked me who he was and how old I was and who he was. And apparently I said I was 36 and he was my dad. So, very clear and coherent answer, but totally inaccurate. So I thought that was kind of funny. So anyway, I spent, they admitted me And I ended up spending the weekend in the hospital. So, and what they found was that I have a tumor on my brain, and I had some swelling and edema. And they suspect that the tumor is a meningioma, which is a benign, non-cancerous tumor that grows from the meninges. And it just takes up space and puts pressure on the brain so it doesn't grow into the brain. And so if you're going to have a tumor, that apparently that's the one you want. You don't want the other ones. And I've had experience with this before. So 21 years ago, I had some mild symptoms where I just kind of felt off, and I had periods where I felt like I could pass out, but I never did. And it didn't matter if I'd eaten, had fluids, what position I was in. And then I would have headaches when I exerted myself. So like if I was lifting weights and doing heavy squats, or deadlifts or something like that. And so I went to the doctor at that time, and the first time they said, well, it's just stress, which is like, eh, maybe, could be, because, you know, life is stressful. And then the second time I went back was after I had the worst headache of my life. And you know, they always teach you in EMT school that if you see somebody that says that they have the worst headache of their life, that you should, explore that a little bit and consider maybe taking them to the hospital. So I went back and they sent me for an MRI and they found a tumor. And so it was a little meningioma. And, but it was pretty, I mean, it was just a little spot. It was like the size of, I don't know what size it was, like, maybe like a lima bean or something, but it didn't have the swelling or the edema. And so I consulted with the neurosurgeon and he removed it. And I have this really awesome scar on my head that my hair covers up. And I was out of work for a month, and then I was back to work. And, I mean, it was like an easier recovery than like from my shoulder surgeries or knee surgeries. And it was no big deal. And the neurosurgeon said it, you know, they're slow growing. It's not likely that it's going to grow back, but, you know, we followed it. So I went back like 6 months later, had an MRI. Everything looked good. Went back another 6 months, had an MRI, everything looked good. And then I went back after a year, and then after 2 years, and then after 5 years. And I mean, I could probably do the math, but you know, basically I'd been going back and tracking it, and nothing had changed. So everything looked good. And the last time I saw him, he said it's not likely that it would grow back. But I still had, like standing orders to have MRIs, like I think every 5 years or something. So I'm like, I was 5 years overdue. This kind of happened out of the blue. You know, the first time I didn't have seizures like this. I mean, I had like, I guess, you could call them like autonomic seizures. So that whole process of feeling like you're going to pass out. But I never did pass out. So it's like I drove because I knew that I wasn't going to pass out, so I could pull over. So I haven't been able to drive, and I've been on medication. And so now I can't drive because I'm not altogether sure. Well, I know if I have a seizure now that I'm going to be out. So, so that's that's been kind of a bummer. So it's different in that way. The size of the tumor looks like it's a little bit bigger, but it has that swelling and the edema, which is something that wasn't present before. So I don't really know where it came from and why it decided to grow again. The doctor said that he couldn't get 100% of it because it was attached to a main vessel in my brain, and he didn't want to risk causing a stroke by scraping it off. But, you know, he was confident that it would not be something that would bother me. Apparently, somewhere around 23% of the population will die of old age and will be found to have had a meningioma. That had nothing to do with them dying, but it's like they died of old age, and then an autopsy would show that they had a meningioma. So it's common, and it doesn't always cause problems. For me, it did for some reason. So this is what I discovered over the weekend, over that weekend, so August 13th and August 14th. And it's kind of funny because August 14th was my husband's birthday, and it was a big milestone birthday. And so we had planned a party, nothing really big, but, you know, family and a couple of close friends. And the first time I had a seizure, I told everybody on my oldest daughter's 18th birthday. So she was so mad at me. It took a long time for her to forgive me because I kind of like ruined her 18th birthday, which is a big milestone birthday. So apparently I'm good at doing that. Come down to, all right, so that's my story. So what does that have to do with you? What does that have to do with behavioral health? So I thought that it would be good to, you know, tell you what had happened, give you a little bit of background about it, and then share with you how I'm dealing with it. Because I'm sure many of you have had to deal with illnesses and, you know, like physical illnesses. And then, of course, you know, some of you deal with like mental health, behavioral health stuff, and sometimes both. And so it's like, well, what are you having any type of injury or illness is really stressful. And it's an added stress on top of all the other stressors that go on in your life. So this all happened when I'm at the beginning of trying to build this program about behavioral health in the fire service, to get people to talk about like how they feel about things, to get them to face their stress response. To acknowledge what they're feeling and not to try and push it away or bury it. And for good reason. You know, so I came across a really useful tool, and it was amazing because it aligned with how I lived and how I believed. And it was before, it was something that I had figured out a long time ago and just lived it. And so you probably have had experiences where you were good at something and you just did something, and because you were good at it and you did it, and maybe you don't remember what it was like learning it. And then when you were asked to teach somebody else, you didn't really know how to teach that, like how to tell them how to be that way. And that was kind of how I felt. You know, and it's like in going to school and working on my doctorate and getting my education, that gave me a lot of foundational information and gave me some tools and things that I could share, but it still didn't quite get at the one nagging question that I've heard over and over and over again, and that I've asked myself too, is why do some people deal with stress better than others? And it's, you know, it's like I knew, like everybody will experience some reaction to stress regardless. It doesn't matter how strong you are. It doesn't matter how big and tough you are. But there is something that matters. And I knew that. And I knew that because of how I lived my life. And I just had a difficult time in teaching people, like, how that, you know, what was behind that? Like, what is the research there? You know, like, why should you listen to me? And it helps when there's research out there. And that's what all this is based in, is there is this large and growing body of mindset research. And I think most people remember hearing about it first when they hear about like stress inoculation training. So like what the military does, particularly, you know, like the Navy SEALs or any of the special ops guys, is that they have to be trained in order to withstand some pretty bad situations, which bad, this after all the stories I've heard saying even bad situations just doesn't seem to cover it. But it's like, I think that's first introduction to the idea of stress inoculation. And stress inoculation is a type of mindset training. And so as they started into this and they started doing research, they started moving beyond like the psychological research and psychological practice and started looking at the physiological aspects of it. So what you think can impact how you feel, but it also can affect what your body does, like what your physiological responses are. And to me, that's like absolutely mind-blowing. And so that's why I started to realize that this is a really a powerful tool. And it's a way that I can help people have a simple yet powerful tool to deal with their stress and stress reaction and help them feel like they have some control, so that, you know, we can minimize or even prevent the development of PTSD or depression or any host of physiological problems. And so I thought that, you know, my own recent situation might be a good way to demonstrate how that might look for someone. At least that's what I'm hoping. So I feel like I'm still not thinking as clearly as I was before all this, but I think I've had a I think of it as having like three hard reboots and then a long, slow process of defragging my operating system. So anybody that's familiar with computers and that whole process, that's kind of what comes to mind for me. So, because I have some difficulty with memory right now, and then I think just, you know, some decision making a little bit, not so much there, but like remembering how to do things, which is kind of interesting to me. So I've had some difficulty in remembering how to make something function, like on my phone or on the computer or something like that. So, but it's all slowly coming back. So, and I'm not going right now. I'm in a state of, I don't know, I don't have all the answers. So, I was supposed to have a consult with a neurosurgeon, but I had COVID, so I couldn't go. And he didn't do first time appointments virtual, so we had to reschedule it. So once I talk to him, I'm going to have a better idea. And so I think the hardest thing for me and for anybody is the unknown. When you face something difficult, it's facing the unknown. Nowhere. I was looking for my phone. I had a picture on it that I wanted to share. So if we think about stress, so obviously my stress is twofold. I mean, one is it's physical, so medical. It's some sort of I don't know what you would call it, illness, I suppose, disease, and then psychological, because it's impacted like how I live and how I go about life. So it's scary. So there's a lot there that's both physical and mental. And so we think about, so I have had this event and it created, well, let me put it this way. So, so if we think about stress, we've got stress. So, the definition that Aaliyah Crumb uses in her research, and she does a whole program around rethinking stress. They define it as a condition in which an individual is confronted with constraints, opportunities related to what he or she desires, but for which the outcomes are perceived as important and uncertain. And that most definitely applies to what I'm going through. I obviously, it's important because I like my brain. I want to be able to continue to use it. I want to keep working and I want to keep contributing. I want to keep helping people. So that's important and, it, you know, affects my quality of life. But there's a lot of uncertainty right now. So that's true. There are a lot of constraints here. So it's like I have to take a medication and I can't drive. So that means, you know, if my husband goes to work, I'm home and I can't go anywhere. So it's like that's a constraint. So that in and of itself kind of takes away some of your freedom. And then opportunities. So, and that, I think that that's the one that is kind of hard for a lot of people, is to look at, okay, well, what's this opportunity? especially in something like this. And then, so it's like, so there's the stress. So I have this condition, and it has constraints, and it is important, and it has a lot of uncertainty, and somewhere in there, there's opportunity. The stress response, so that's the body's non-specific reaction to the demands made on it. So, you know, it's like that, it's that response that we're all familiar with. And our body can go through the stress response regardless of what the stressor is. It could be like very benign, like an unexpected bill in the mail, to something more severe where you respond to an aid call and get shot at, or something of that nature. So, and that stress response releases adrenaline, which everybody is familiar with, and that's what mostly people will focus on, and then also and then cortisol. And so most people will focus on the adrenaline and cortisol. It also releases dopamine, and it can release oxytocin. So there's basically 31 neurotransmitters, neurohormones that get released. So, but we focus on the adrenaline and the cortisol most often. And so those are the things that make us feel shaky, on edge, ready to respond. And so this reaction can be enhancing. And I think that most people know this, but because of the stress assault that firefighters experience, we start to lose focus of how stress can help us. So, you know, we've started this narrative around stress as stress is bad and stress is going to make you sick and so forth and so forth, and that we needed to control it or cope or something like that. So we've lost track of like, oh, I have just experienced a stressful situation and now my body is reacting, and it's reacting in accordance to how it should react. And so so stress in the beginning enhances performance and productivity. So it increases brain processing. You're able to take in more information and make quicker decisions and quicker accurate decisions. And you are, and the information you're taking in, it's like you're taking in a lot more and noticing a lot more. Your memory is improved. They noticed the increase in brain processing. They did a study where they had flashing numbers for bungee jumpers. And so they saw an increase in the number of numbers that people noticed when they bungee jumped. And so I can't think of anything that can get your adrenaline going more than bungee jumping. I'm just thinking about that. That gets my adrenaline going. And then improving memory. So they did a study where they had people put their hand in an ice bucket. And I'm sure you all know that when you put your hand in ice, it can actually be uncomfortable and painful. And they actually found that stimulated people's memory to be improved. And then focus, it can create more focus in your attention. So you can zero in on stressors. So stress can positively affect our performance. And so they, you know, identified each one of these processes in couple studies. And then stress can improve health and vitality. Because of the neurohormones that are released, it can help with quicker recovery. So moderate stress in the studies that they they've looked at, they found that moderate stress facilitates like knee surgery recovery. So it can shift your metabolic response from like being catabolic, where your body is basically consuming itself for energy, to anabolic, where it actually helps to build and build up stronger. And that helps with surgery recovery. Enhanced immunity. And so the example that they give is like with vaccinations. So, you know, basically our vaccinations are introducing some aspect of whatever it is we're being vaccinated against, you know, whether it's a small amount of live or dead, whatever the process is, it forces the body to react to it. And as it reacts to it, it means that it is recognizing that as something that is bad and building up antibodies to it. So this is something that they do with like food allergies. So, and this was a really interesting study too, is that they took kids. So it's common to, for kids that have peanut allergies, to introduce them to small amount of peanuts. And so they would consume small amounts of peanuts. And so they, this is a protocol that they do to help kids get over their peanut allergies. And so in the particular study, they talked about the reaction, the histamine reaction to consuming the peanuts as being a side effect, and an unpleasant side effect. And that, you know, it was part of the process of getting over the peanut allergy. And then that was one study group. And the other study group, they explained to the kids that reaction was actually positive, and it meant that their body was reacting and getting stronger. And that over time, their body is going to be strong enough that they'll be able to consume the peanuts and not have any reaction. And so when they talked to the kids after they went through their program, and then they asked, you know, what advice would you give to other kids going through this program? The kids that were told that it's a, you know, like it's a necessary side effect, they said their advice would be that it's bad, it doesn't feel good, and you just need to get through it. So it's kind of that, you know, just get it out. And then the kids that were told that it's your body getting stronger, they said, you know, it's a really good experience. It's going to help your body be stronger. And you can do it. You can handle it. Their experiences were, you know, the end result was that both groups, the kids were able to develop a tolerance to peanuts and were no longer having allergic reaction. But one group saw it as a negative but necessary experience and very unpleasant. And the other group said, well, it wasn't a pleasant experience, but, you know, my body got stronger and I'm strong. So they felt more confident and felt like they had more control. So anyway, so that was enhancing immunity. And then there's a physiological toughening. So stress less. So you lift weights, you know that when you're lifting weights, you're stressing your muscles and you're creating little micro tears, and then those get repaired and it rebuilds the muscles and makes them stronger. And then you probably, if you've ever had a bone break, it's like where the bone repairs itself, it's always stronger in that spot. So so it creates improved health and vitality. And then stress can facilitate learning and growth. So mental toughness. So it, you know that you can handle it. You can handle more. You can take more. And that it's not going to break you. So it can create a sense of confidence and strength. And control. It can create deeper relationships. Part of that is from the oxytocin that is released. Oxytocin is known as the cuddle hormone. And so you've probably heard stories about people who go through traumatic experiences together and they develop a pretty strong bond. And so it's part of our survival mechanism. When we are threatened in a way that triggers our stress response, that we seek out people. So it's our normal response to seek out people because there's comfort with other people. There's survival in numbers, And so stressors will draw us together. And then a greater appreciation for life. And I know that this is something, you know, every time somebody I know dies because of something, I know every time I've told myself, okay, I'm going to embrace life. I'm going to quit putting off those things. So whatever those things are. My husband and I had a really friend who just was so full of life and vitality, and he was so active and so fit, and he got cancer, and I think it was lung cancer, and he was not a smoker. And he went through chemo, and I think they might have done some surgery at that time, and it seemed like he beat it, but it came back, and I think he ended up going into I may have this backwards, but anyway, I think it ended up in his arm, and they amputated his arm. So maybe what it was bone cancer first, and it was in his arm, and they amputated his arm. They thought they got it all. They thought he was clear, and then it went into his lungs. So, but he ended up dying. And, you know, he had two beautiful daughters, and he had just reconnected with his estranged wife. And they were really, living life. And so, you know, you see that, and it really makes you appreciate it. And maybe you felt this yourself, where you've witnessed some sort of, something stressful, some sort of tragedy, and you've vowed to live your life and not to have regrets. Same thing happened. My mom had a bad outcome to a surgery. It had a, ended up having a stroke and then lived another 4 years. But after her stroke, she wasn't her. And the whole reason she had the surgery was because she had scoliosis really bad and had a lot of pain. And she always wanted to travel, and the pain kept her from traveling. And so she wanted to have the surgery so that she could decrease the amount of pain that she had so that she could travel, like she, her and my dad had always talked about. And then because of the surgery and how the outcome of that, that basically took everything away. And, you know, she was like late 60s when that happened. And in this day and age, you know, it's like that's still pretty young. So so stress, whatever your stress experience is, it can kind of make you rethink your priorities. And that's, you know, that's a good thing. So so stress can be this really amazing, positive growth experience, even as unpleasant as it is. And so that's kind of what we want to focus on. And so, and that's where the power of mindset comes in. Because I said earlier, you remember, that people often, they think that stress is going to make you sick. And so this was, like at some level, I knew my attitude around stress was different than that. I always looked at stress as a challenge. And it was just how I did. It's how I was raised. It was, I mean, again, it's like, I didn't know really where that came from. So if you don't really know where it comes from, it's kind of hard to teach people. But I saw a YouTube TED Talk, and it was Kelly McGonigal, and it was How to Make Stress Your Friend. And so that was kind of mind-blowing for me, because that was the first time I had heard anybody talk about how stress can make you better, how stress can make you stronger. And that aligned with how I believed. And she was a health psychologist. And so like her job up until she started reading some of this mindset research was that, oh, stress is going to make you sick. You have to manage it. And so she read some studies around the time that she did that TED Talk that helped her shift her mindset around stress. And so I highly recommend, if you haven't watched it, watch it. So it's a TED Talk. It's Kelly McGonigal, and it's How to Make Stress Your Friend. So it's 15 minutes. And she's very on point, succinct, direct, a lot different than this. But that like just blew my mind. And that got me looking more and more into mindset and really started making me think about like, how can I use this to help firefighters shift their mindset around stressors that they experience, and their belief around what it means to experience what is completely normal as a stress response. And that's where Aaliyah Crumb comes into play. So she is a researcher. She's actually a clinical psychologist and a researcher at Stanford University. And so this information comes from their mind body lab. And so they have a program that you can go through, watch short videos, do a workbook, and so you can do that as well, mind body lab, and click on the Rethinking Stress Toolkit, and then you can actually download some of the materials and watch videos that will talk more about it, and then you can read more about the research on all of it, and you can have your mind blown as well. And then I think like the other thing that keeps coming up for me with all this too is that I had an officer. So when I worked as a firefighter, I had an officer, Marty Lefebvre, and I considered him a friend and a mentor. And he said to me that he admired how I handled stress. And he made the observation that it didn't really matter what the stress was. It was more about what I did with it. And that really is also a big part of mindset, is it's not about the stressor, but it's about what you do with it. And knowing that there's something you can do with it. So if you think about stress, and the fact that it creates conflict. So it's conflict. So it's when what you have and what you want differ. Because if you didn't want it or you didn't care about it, you wouldn't be stressed. The uncertainty, so when you don't know what is going to happen, and the pressure, when you need to be better, quicker, and faster. I mean, so those are like kind of the three factors that kind of go into what a stressor is. So you can either experience that with panic and some performance anxiety, depression, loss of interest, or stress-related illness, which is that we've been taught about it, stress and stress being bad, or you can look at it as a motivation and a way to improve peak performance. A way to grow, so stress-related growth, and then physiological thriving. So as I went through earlier, you know, all those things and how, you know, how stress and the stress response, how it can help you be better and stronger and more vital and more productive and more focused and all those things. And so we might think about that as like, okay, well, maybe when we've had a little bit of stress, but not when we have this, you know, constant, unrelenting stress on stress on stress. And so there's some truth in that. But there's also some things that we can do that are really beneficial and will contribute to our growth. So the first thing is understanding that stress is not the bad guy. So stress can make you better. Somewhere I had a stress questionnaire somewhere that I had, I thought, ready that I could share these questions. So let's see. I'm just going to look here really quick and see if I can find this. So Well, that's kind of funny. I had it up, and now I don't know where it went. So there's actually a stress measure that you could take, which actually is a good thing to review occasionally. There it is. Okay. So okay. So there's 8 items that address the extent to which an individual adopts a mindset that the effects of stress are enhancing or debilitating. So the preliminary questions, which are optional, is like, how much stress are you experiencing in your life right now? So that would be a good one for the fire service. And for me personally too. So they assign there's none, a moderate amount, or an extreme amount. And so they assign none as 1, a moderate amount as 4, and an extreme amount as 7. So I think for me, to be honest, I would probably say a moderate amount. And that's mostly because there's a lot unknown. And then what is the primary source of stress in your life? And so this is a good question. When I have people come in to see me, sometimes they don't know what the primary source of stress in their life is because they have dealt with it by avoiding it. And so they've never really focused on it. And so that seems like an obvious question, but sometimes it's a hard one to answer. And I would say for me, it's because of like recent events, it's my health. And the uncertainty around, you know, what comes next. And so that's the stress. And then how stressful do you perceive it to be? And I would say, again, I would say moderate. So then the stress mindset questions are, you would score it 0, strongly disagree, 1, disagree, 2, neither agree nor disagree, so neutral, 3, agree, 4, strongly agree. So the questions are, 1, or I guess these are statements. The effects of stress are negative and should be avoided. So how would you rate that? Do you disagree or do you agree? So I strongly disagree. So I would say that's a 0. And that's because that's kind of how I've been my whole life. But I know a lot of people that would say they would strongly agree. It is negative and you should avoid it. But it's kind of hard to avoid it because stress is throughout life and most definitely in the fire service. The second statement, experiencing stress facilitates my learning and growth. Well, I strongly agree with that. I definitely have an attitude that stress makes me stronger. Experiencing stress depletes my health and vitality. And I would love to strongly disagree, but I disagree, and I disagree with it. Because of what I've learned about stress and stress's response and the importance of mindset. But I think before learning about mindset, I probably would have answered that differently. I would have said, yes, stress depletes health and vitality. But I disagree with that now. Whereas before I learned, I might have said I agree with it. experiencing stress enhances my performance and productivity. I strongly agree with that. Experiencing stress inhibits my learning and growth. I strongly disagree with that. Experiencing stress improves my health and vitality. I agree with that. I have a hard time strongly agreeing with it, but I do agree with it. Experiencing stress debilitates my performance and productivity. I disagree with that. I want to strongly disagree with it just by virtue of like knowing the research, but I think there are times where it can interfere. So it depends on whether you're thinking about it in like the immediate short term or long term. If you think about it in the short term, sometimes stress and your stress reaction can get in the way, especially when you go from stressful event to stressful event to stressful event. But in the long run, I do disagree with it inhibiting learning and growth. Experiencing stress improves my health and vitality. I agree. I think I just read that one. Experiencing stress debilitates my performance and productivity. The first one was enhances my performance and productivity. This one is debilitates my performance and productivity. And that one is one that I disagree with. And then the effects of stress are positive and should be utilized. And I strongly agree with that. So I realize I just repeated a couple of those. So it's basically, there are the same questions, but one asks you in negative terms and one asks you in positive terms. So like experiencing stress enhances my performance and productivity, or experiencing stress debilitates my performance and productivity. Like you would answer those questions, and these questions can be found at the Stanford Mind Body Lab under stress mindset measurement. So go look at it and take it for yourself. Let's see. And it does tell you let's see, math is hard, especially right now. So 0, and it's got starred. So reverse scoring. So it looks like the higher the score, the better. So if you have a higher score, then that means that you have a more growth enhanced mindset. So it would be, so the effects of stress are negative and should be avoided. If you say 0, strongly disagree, this one has an asterisk. So when it says reverse scoring, it means that actually gets scored as a 4. And then experiencing stress facilitates my learning and growth. Strongly agree. That would be a 4. And that one is a 4. So some of these are reverse scored. So if they're reverse scored, then you just swap, whatever the opposite is. So if it's a 0, then it would then be a 4. If it's a 1, then it would be a 3. And if it's a 2, it's a 2. So anyway, looking at it that way, it's like the higher the score, the more you have a growth mindset in that stress is good for you. stress is helpful. And that's where you want to be. And so, go find the quiz yourself, the measure yourself, and take it and be honest and see where you're at. And then let's shift that. And there's a way to do this. So, and this is also why I really, really liked this particular research and this tool. So it's very effective and it's not that difficult to do. And doing it is something that can really turn things around for people, and it could be quick and really simple. So to shift your stress mindset, there are three steps. First one is acknowledge stress. So it is what it is. So in that acknowledgement, you're like recognizing what it is, and you're not judging it as good or bad. It is. It's stress. It's life. And I think most of the time people are pretty good at going, well, it's life, you know, like stuff happens. And then the second step is welcome stress. So you're stressed because you care. If I was told about somebody that I didn't really know, and I was told that, oh, they had seizures and they have a tumor, I would feel bad. I mean, I would be like, oh, wow, that kind of sucks. But I wouldn't be stressed about it. I'm stressed because that is an event that is happening to me, and it has created a whole bunch of mixed emotions. And it impacts me, and then it impacts people around me who I love. So it definitely is, well, I'm stressed because I care. And it's the same for you and the things that you experience. You know, most people don't go into the fire service if they don't care about that job. A lot of it, like that job, it provides purpose and meaning, and people generally will go into it at least in some part because they want to help people. And then of course there's a lot of things that have changed, like what that job is and what it means, and there's a lot of different stressors now, and so it's like some of those things that meant something to you are changing, and maybe you're losing some of that. So it's like, you know, figuring out like what that is, and then recognizing, you know, what it is that you care about and that you're, you know, that you're stressed. And then the last one is utilizing that stress. So stress is meant to make you stronger. It helps you grow. It makes you better. So stress is designed to facilitate. So what does that look like? So this first one of acknowledging stress, what I said, and it's more powerful if you write it down. But this first step is really, really key. And it's something that you can use. And I've said this before in previous shows. It's like just answering this first question can be helpful in processing some of what you're experiencing at work. And it shifts your brain function from your amygdala, so the reactive area, to your prefrontal cortex, to your proactive area, And so if we can acknowledge stress, face it, name it, then we're shifting it from the amygdala to the frontal lobe. And that shift is really powerful in helping to prevent PTSD, because it moves it somewhere where we can actually do something with it. So even if we don't get to go beyond that first step. So the written exercise, there's I'm stressed about. So I can say I'm stressed about having had seizures and having a brain tumor again. And my reaction to it, so I've had a lot of time throughout life to deal with stress, and so I am definitely somebody who is going to face it. I might ignore it, I might avoid it, but that for me is a short-term thing, because I know what happens when you avoid and you ignore and you try and push down or push away something that is stressful, and if you don't face it. So I know, as uncomfortable as something is, that if I face it, it might suck, it might feel bad, but it doesn't have the power over me that it would if I tried to push it away. So the more you try and stuff down, push away, ignore, avoid something, the stronger it gets and the longer it lasts. So for this, what I'm going through right now, I think I've been kind of numb. And I think part of that has been that my brain got rebooted, and so I wasn't thinking clearly. And so I initially have been looking at things as more like an observer, and just like with curiosity. And then it kind of seems like the more my brain comes online, then the more fear starts to come in. So I'm not sure. I mean, I think there was a little bit of fear there first, but I think it was more like curiosity, like, you know, this is kind of interesting. I didn't really know what to make of this. So I suppose like that's kind of a shock reaction, which would be normal for anybody who experiences something traumatic and life-threatening. And that could be true for you facing a call. That's one of the things, I think that's one of the complaints or criticisms that have come up about defusings, you know, because the training around defusing is that you do it within 3 days, and most often it would be like immediate, like that day right after the call. You know, it's like when you do that, you disrupt a person's process, like them, like kind of getting through like their shock reaction. And it kind of cheats them out of some of the process that they need to move it from the amygdala to their prefrontal cortex. And I'm saying like defusing in a more formal sense, not like, you know, you go back as a crew and sit around the beanery table and talk about the call. You know, that's different. That's informal. It's not something that's forced. You're not forced to, you know, to talk about it or to feel something about it or to, you know, really examine your part in it or whatever, you know, unless you want to. So people should be allowed to talk if they need to talk or not talk if they don't need to talk. I know that these recent events, I'm pretty sure that I went through kind of a process of shock. It sometimes things happen that it's hard to wrap your brain around. And then maybe some of it was because of having gone through a hard reboot. So I'm sure that there was some physiological reason for it too. The typical reactions to stress, like some shock, like not really knowing what to think about it or feel about it, that would be something. Typical responses to that stress. So for this particular thing, emotionally, I have, a lot of emotions that we would typically label as negative. So, fear, sadness, regret, what else? I think a little bit of anger, some frustrations, because I did mention that I would go 5 years, I think I was 5 years overdue for my last scan. And I don't know that would have made any difference, but maybe it did or would. I don't know. So, I'm a little mad at myself. So emotional, I'm kind of all over the place. And you probably heard earlier, I was making jokes. I'm pretty typical for firefighters. I make jokes about things. So some people find that a bit disconcerting, and they might think I don't take it seriously. But I've always had a philosophy, I'm either going to laugh or cry. And I was taught not to, crying was okay for me, but not for my brothers. But I heard their message, so I never wanted anybody to see me cry. So I would laugh. So I just saw this. A friend shared a trailer with me for a documentary that's The Call We Carry. And I'm not sure where it's going to end up. I'm not sure where it's going to end up being shown, but it's called The Call We Carry. And somebody on there said that they got really good at smiling, always having a smile on his face. And it didn't matter what happened, what was going on. He could smile. And he got well practiced at it. So that definitely is me. I will smile and I will joke and I will laugh. That's the kind of the behavioral aspect of things. Physiologically, my typical responses to that stress would be it's difficult for me to sleep. Some people get stressed and they go to sleep. Like my husband, when he gets stressed, he sleeps. When I get stressed, I can't sleep. And it doesn't even matter if something's running through my head. But sometimes it's I'm tired, but my body just won't relax. So it's that wired but tired. I have a harder time sitting still. So it's been kind of sucky to be going through this and have COVID, because the COVID has kind of kept me down. I was exhausted when I got out of the hospital, but COVID just kind of ensured that I stayed that way for a long time. So it's like there's just been a lot of stuff going through my head, and I haven't been able to do anything with it. And that's something that I've seen happen a lot to a lot of firefighters, is that, you know, they used to do so many physical things to be healthy, to help them deal with the stressors of their life. And it's like the more they get stressed, the less they do anything to, you know, kind of burn off that energy. So physiologically, that goes on with me, where I want to move, I want to do something, but I don't always know what that is. So sometimes it's like this kind of undirected energy. The other thing I notice is that it's like I'll catch myself holding my breath. And then I'll be like, oh man, I was holding my breath. I've been a lot more aware about that this time. So I've been breathing a lot. Well, I've been doing the physiological sigh. So this is a method to simulate the antidote to the stress response. It's something that Andrew Huberman talked about in his podcast about stress and stress management. So he talked about the importance of the physiological sigh, and it's actually something that we do on our own. But it's something that we can do, that we can actually use to kind of trigger that antidote to the stress response. But I know that if I'm walking around the house sighing, I'm stressed. Or if I all of a sudden realize I'm not breathing. I mean, obviously I have to, but it's like that sensation of holding my breath. And then I might notice like an increase in my heart rate. And then I imagine along with that might be an increase in blood pressure too. But it's not like I go look for blood pressure cuff to take my blood pressure at that time. So anyway, so I know pretty much what my responses are to stress. So it's like naming what you're stressed about, and then acknowledging what typical reactions are, and those can be things like going and eating ice cream, going and running on the treadmill, consciously avoiding thinking about it, which actually expends a lot of energy, distracting from it. And distracting from it might include, you know, well, avoiding it, distracting, so watching TV, playing video games, going shopping, drinking alcohol, smoking a joint. I mean, it's like there's a lot of ways you can distract and avoid. And there's, you know, so it's like when something happens, do you immediately think, I want to eat something, or I want to drink something, or I got to go look at Amazon? So those are going to be your typical responses. And they're going to fall like in the emotional, behavioral, and physiological realm. So, I mean, I just went through kind of like what mine are. So like going through that process, it helps me to face what I'm experiencing and what I'm feeling. And as I said before, it moves it from the reactive part of my brain to the prefrontal cortex. And so then I could think about it and I could be more proactive. So this acknowledging stress, that little exercise right there if you did that after your calls or before you went to bed and kind of ran through your day and all the calls you went on, or before you went home, just doing that one thing can have a huge effect. So it, again, it moves it from the react proactive. So you can think about it and you can make some decisions about it. And so it gives you an opportunity to have some control. So the next step is welcoming stress. So you're stressed because you care. So obviously I'm stressed because I'm the person with the tumor. And that stresses me out. And it stresses me out because then I think about all the things that I potentially could miss out on with my grandkids. And then I think about what it would do to them if anything happened. So, you know, it's like there's a lot to care about there. And yours, it doesn't have to obviously be that, but it's like with the job, you know, it's like when you start to realize that you're not enjoying your job or you're losing your compassion because you're seeing the same things over and over again, or you're doing things that you weren't trained for, or you're doing things that wasn't part of the job when you signed on. There could be a number of things there. It's like you cared at one time and you're now finding that you don't care. And that might be contributing to you being reactionary, which then people are saying, well, you're angry, you're irritable. Or you're withdrawn because, like, you know, if you don't want to be angry and irritable with people you care about, then you withdraw from them. I've heard from a number of firefighters where they've done some form of withdrawing for some reason. And a lot of it has to do with them experiencing a lot of anger and being more irritable. And you know, some of it is like they get overwhelmed physiologically. So, you know, like their stress response, their reaction to stress is just this kind of, the hyper arousal. They get overstimulated. And so then they withdraw from the source of that stimulation, which means they're withdrawing from people. Sometimes they're withdrawing because they don't want to get mad. They don't want to snap at people that they care about. And then I think, you know, then they quit going out. I think the worst is when you withdraw from your family, from your loved ones. You may be withdrawing from people in the public because you don't know how you're going to react. And so you don't want to get in trouble. You just don't want to take a swing at somebody. So it's that being stressed because you care. So you want to welcome stress. Because it's a reminder that you care, and it keeps you aligned with what you care about. Because when you deny your stress, you're denying the thing that you care about. So with my medical condition, I'm sure I could ignore it. Actually, I'm sure I couldn't, but I know there are people who do and would, and you know, they may like delay getting more answers because they don't want to face it. So that means I would be turning my back on like my health and what my health allows me to do, and my health allows me to be there for my kids and for my grandkids, and to participate in a job that I care about, and you know, to do the things I want to do, you know, all those things in life that you want to do. So I have to face it. Because ignoring it means that I could make a decision that could move me further away from what's important. And the same would be for you. You know, whatever it is that you have recognized as your stress, and recognizing, like, you know, what your reaction is and what your responses are, and then recognizing what it is that you care about. Because if you didn't care, you wouldn't be stressed. So if you ignore it, then you deny what you care about. And so in welcoming stress, and again, it's like, if you can write down, all the better, and you can do this a lot faster than I've talked about it. But you want to write down, you know, well, you'll have the first part of it where you did the acknowledging stress, so you know what it is and what your responses are, and then. And then you'll talk about, you know, what is important. Why is that important? And then when you do that, then pay attention to how that feels. You know, what is the sensation of welcoming that stress? And then connect with the positive motivation and the personal values behind your stress. So even though there can be an experience of discomfort, there's also a great sense of relief that comes with that. So the benefits of welcoming stress is experiencing reduced anxiety, having an increased sense of control, experiencing increased positive energy, and then having improved health over time. And so that comes from connecting with the underlying reason why you care. And then the last part of this is utilizing stress. So stress is designed to facilitate. So this is the what you do with it. And sometimes this is kind of the hard part. So this is like where you make meaning. I said a long time ago, and when I talked about resilience, that I thought, you know, I had read that resilience was about being flexible, learning, and adapting, and that actually, you know, fits in with this as well, because this last part, like utilizing stress, is the adapting part, and that's the making meaning. So for this one, you just look back at what you wrote for the first two, and then just, it makes it sound so easy. Look at what you did previously and make a subtle shift in looking at your stress as being a collaborator and not a competitor. And look at how you can shift your responses so that you can respond differently or feel differently. Sometimes it just means shifting one word or one thought. And then focus in on like one small change that you can make. And that doesn't have to be a big one. That could be small. It can be just a shift in a word. Think about, I'm trying to think about a good example. I'm thinking about an example from my situation, and I find that one of the biggest things around all this is that I've needed to be more open and to actually allow people to help and to accept help. Thing that is different for me. And I'm sure that would be true of any firefighter because, you don't need help, you help people. I can't tell you how many of my clients have been like, oh, forget me. How can I help you? And there is a lot of value and power in being able to help others. And there is a time and place for that. But there's also a time and place to refocus things around to yourself and to take care of yourself. And so that is probably one of the things that is the hardest for me is to think about how do I care for myself? And that's that. So utilizing stress, it's like, what can I do different? And so I managed to find a way to help myself and talk about this and to use it in a tool that I could tell you about that hopefully you will get something from. And so it kind of served a couple purposes. It doesn't make it better. This is not about having a Pollyanna attitude, everything's good. It's not about making lemonade out of lemons. It's really seeing what's in front of you and seeing what is and recognizing that it affects you because you care, and then what can you shift? What can you take from that understanding that will help you grow? And sometimes that growth process doesn't happen right away, but knowing that you can grow from it might be enough. Knowing that eventually you're going to come around to being able to utilize that and to be stronger and to be better. So when you go through this process and you think about that, if you're not quite ready to make some meaning out of it, then allow yourself the grace, the compassion to accept that you're not quite there to make any meaning out of it, but to trust that you will and that you can, you are capable of it. And then notice how that feels. And the benefits of that means greater strength, resilience, improved performance, efficiency, realization of unforeseen opportunities and possibility. I mean, this is where that idea of, like it, towards the beginning when I said something about it being, you know, like conflict or opportunity, like stress being conflict or opportunity. And I'm like, it's hard to look at something stressful and go, oh yeah, this is a great opportunity. We don't usually think that way, but eventually you come around to it and that's what you want to do. And then the last part of all this, which I am going to mention, but not spend time talking about because I've gone far too long, is to create an anchor. So something that will trigger you to go through this process of acknowledging stress, welcoming stress, and utilizing stress. It can be like, you know, at the firehouse, it's like the more often you can anchor it to something, the better it will be. So it's like if you go on a call, it's like every time you get back into the rig to go back into service, that would be a perfect time to do at least the very first step of this. You know, maybe you can get through all three of the steps, but I know you could do at least the first one. Maybe you can do it before you go to bed, whether you're at the station or you're at home. You can anchor it to when you get in your vehicle to drive home. So it can be a great way to transition from work to home so that you're not carrying stuff home with you. But, you know, anchor it to something that you're going to be experiencing every time. Do it every time you stop at a red light. You can do it every time you fasten your seatbelt. You can do it every time you reach for a doorknob. You can anchor it to a certain stress signal, a certain physiological, behavioral, or psychological signal. If you notice that you're holding your breath, then maybe that's your trigger. So do a physiological sigh and then ask yourself, what is going on? What am I stressed about? What is it? So it's going to be very personal to you. So you can figure that out. But the important thing is that the more you do this, the better you will be at it, the more automatic it will be, and then it will become just part of how you are, and you won't have to think about it anymore. It just will be how you are, and that's where you want to be. That's what's going to help make you healthy and be able to grow from whatever stressors you experience. And that's basically where I am. So, do I like stress? No, I don't like stress. I am not a crazy person. But I do know that I get stronger every time I experience something stressful. And I know that it's not always pleasant, and I know sometimes I can't always do something about it right away. But I know first and foremost that I can in the moment at least acknowledge it and notice what it feels like. And then I honor those feelings, because everything you feel, every emotion you experience is important, and it's part of who you are. And it's part of being a human being. So I hope that you found this helpful. Again, if you want the information about rethinking stress, I want you to go to Mind Body Lab and look up their I'm trying to bring it up. Okay, so there's Stanford Mind and Body Lab. If you Google that, go to that, open up that page, and then you can look at the materials and measures. That's where you can find the stress mindset measure. So you can take that assessment yourself and see where you're at. And then hopefully you have a high number, but if you have a lower number, that's okay. Then you can go to the interventions and toolkits tab, and you can either click on rethink stress intervention, and then you can download the PowerPoint slides from a presentation that they gave at MIT and the workbook that goes along with it. Or you can click on the Rethink Stress Toolkit tab, which will take you to a Stanford Spark Tools. And then you can go through the program there. So there's 7 steps. There are several short videos that you can watch. And then there's a workbook that you can download that you can answer questions in. And it's basically the questions that I discussed here. So do that. So Stanford Mind Body Lab. And then I mentioned Andrew Huberman, Huberman Lab podcast. I highly recommend his stuff. You think I talk? He talks a lot more. look up his stress and stress management. He talks about the physiological psi, which is the quickest, easiest, simplest tool you can use to stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system. So it's not like relaxation breathing where you're going to immediately feel like, oh, I'm so relaxed, but you're going to feel like the edge has been taken off. And the whole point of it is to keep your brain engaged, keep your prefrontal cortex engaged with what you're doing, and don't get caught back in the amygdala and the fight flight reactive. And then he interviews Dr. Aaliyah Crumb, and they talk about mindset, and that is a great episode. He has a number of great episodes. But those are the two that are, you know, most prominent and related to what I talked about today. And then he's also got some great talks about sleep. So anyway, check him out. Huberman Lab podcast, or he's also on YouTube. And then Dr. Aaliyah Crumb with Stanford Mind Body Lab, Rethinking Stress. So check those out. And thank you for listening. I hope you got something out of this. And chat next time. Thank you very much. Have a good day, good night, wherever you are, whenever you listen.